Pad Paramahamsa Parva Jipchara Sotera Sada Sri Shimas Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vinanta Swami Maharaj Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parva Jipchara Sotera Sada Sri Shimas Divine Grace Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai Nanta Kuta Vishnu Vinda Ki Jai Samaveda Vakta Vinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Garanga. Mom Vishnabhaya, Krishna Vasai Bhutale, Shimati Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tanamani Namasi Sarasvadim, Gauravana Vichani Nivishesh Shunya Vari Paskatari Satayani. Mom Vishnabhaya, Krishna Vasai Bhutale, Shimati Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Namane. Shri Barshavana Vi Devi Dayataya Kupadaye, Krishna Sambandha Vijnana, Daine Prabhave Namaha. Jai, all glories to the Prabhupada, all glories to the Bhakti Siddhanta Sasu Maharaj Thakur. So, I think for the sake of time, I had a verse here, but let's just repeat it three times. That's probably enough. Okay. Tatra Bhagavatam Dharman.
Tatra Bhagavatam Dharman.
Sikshe Gurvatma Daivata.
Sikshe
Amaya Yanuvritya Vais
Amaya Yanuvritya Vais
Tushedat Matmadohari
Tushedat Matmadohari
Tatra Bhagavatan Dharman
Tatra Bhagavatan Dharman
Sikshe Gurvatmadaivata
Sikshe Gurvatmadaivata
Amaya Yanuvritya Yais
Amaya Yanuvritya Yais
Tushedat Matmadohari Tatra Bhagavatam Dharman
Tatra Bhagavatam Dharman
Sikshe Gurvatma Daivata
Sikshe Gurvatma
Amaya Na Vrithya Amaya Yanu Vrithya Yais
Amaya Yanu Vrithya Yais
Tushe Datmatma Dohari
Tushe Datmatma Dohari
So the translation, this is Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.22. Accepting the bona fide spiritual master as one's life and soul and worshipable deity, the disciple should learn from him the process of pure devotional service. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the soul of all souls, is inclined to give himself to his pure devotees. Therefore, the disciple should learn from the spiritual master to serve the Lord without duplicity and in such a faithful and favorable way that the Supreme Lord, being satisfied, will offer himself to the faithful disciple. So, of course, this is only one of many, many verses throughout Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures, Bhagavad Gita, that emphasize over and over again the importance of the role of the spiritual master. The guru and service to guru is absolutely essential for our spiritual life. And this verse I like particularly because it talks about the role that the spiritual master is very, very dear to the personality of Godhead. He's inclined to give himself the pure devotees and for one who serves that spiritual master faithful and favorable way, the Lord also offer himself to the faithful devotee. So that's quite a wonderful thing that we hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and how he favors the guru and the disciples of the guru. So of course today is the holy appearance day of his divine grace, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So I thought we would start with a very familiar poem. This is the Vyas Puja poem that Srila Parshula Prabhupada offered in 1935 to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Adore, adore ye all the happy day, blessed than heaven, sweeter than May, when he appeared at Puri, the holy place, my Lord and Master, his divine grace. O my Master, the evangelic angel, give us thy light up thy candle, struggle for existence, a human race. The only hope is divine grace. Misled we are, all going astray. Save us, Lord, our fervent pray. Wonder thy ways to turn our face. Adore thy feet, your divine grace. Forgotten Krishna, we fallen soul. Pain most heavy, the illusions toll. Darkness around us, all untrace. The only hope is divine grace. Message of service thou hast brought. A healthful life is Chaitanya wrought. Unknown to all, it's full of grace. That's your gift, your divine grace. Absolute ascension thou hast proved. In personal calamity thou hast moved. This gives us a life anew and fresh. Worship thy feet, your divine grace. Had you not come, who had told the message of Krishna, forceful and bold? That's your right, you have the mace. Save me, O fallen, your divine grace. The line of services drawn by you is pleasing and healthy like a morning dew. The oldest of all, but in a new dress, miracle done, your divine grace. So this wonderful poem by Srila Prabhupada, very much appreciated by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. He particularly liked it, actually this one stanza that he particularly liked, he said that he would read it to all his guests. He'd point this out, how his disciple had written this. Absolute ascension thou hast proved, in personal calamity thou hast removed. And of course, that's exactly what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj did his entire life. Completely preached and worked and almost fought against this impersonal calamity of people who are not understanding worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And understanding absolute ascension is so nicely said in just a few words. Absolute ascension, a person. Krishna is a person. And taking away the impersonal calamity of not understanding the person of Krishna was so important. So, he very much appreciated it, of course, and also many of the other things that Prabhupada wrote. And Prabhupada also wrote a whole essay after this poem, went along with it. And after that, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said about Srila Prabhupada, Abhay Charande, said, print anything that he writes. So he got this great endorsement from his guru. Now, of course, today, very, very important day, of the appearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. He followed in his footsteps of his illustrious father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the line from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, Ramanavendra Puri, Ishwara Puri, Ishwara Puri, then the six Goswamis, then on down, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Jagannath Das Babaji, and who is Shiksha, the guru of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Very, very famous and incredibly advanced and important acharya in our line. So, and of course, to us, one of the most important things is he is, of course, the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada. And so we often say that we wouldn't be here without Srila Prabhupada, but we might not be here without Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj also instructing, encouraging Srila Prabhupada to come to the West and preach this Krishna consciousness movement in the English language. This all falls together in such a way that we are incredibly fortunate recipients of this mercy, of this line. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, was very instrumental in reviving Vaishnavism through his preaching and his writing, and he tirelessly worked to defeat caste Brahmanism, Sahajiism, and personalism, all of these things. Because apparently Vaishnavism was in very, very poor shape. And not well understood or appreciated, and very much so many deviations were there. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati continued and expanded this work of his father. He wrote extensively, he preached strongly, he wrote an incredible amount, we'll get to that later, but an incredible amount of literature, printed books, magazines, papers, anything and everything. He established 64 temples. Throughout India, he established his Gaudiya Math movement, which established 64 temples. About 50 of them were in Bengal, in that area, but also outside Allahabad, Bombay, others like that, and other cities. And also it's interesting, of course, now Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, remember that he was born in 1874, and he lived till 1936, so a lot of his preaching was in the first part of the 20th century. And of course, that was an age of great change, industrialization, all of that going, the modern world was there. And rather than sort of like retreating from that or totally denying it, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj almost embraced what the modern world had to offer and used it very, very cleverly in the spreading of Krishna consciousness. So he really brought the Vaishnava tradition, ancient tradition, into the 20th century. And of course, he was the first to spread Krishna consciousness outside of India because he understood Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's direction that we would hear the chanting of the holy name in every town and village throughout the world. Not every town and village throughout India, but every town and village throughout the entire world. So, of course, he sent disciples to the West. They weren't very successful, but he tried. He gave them encouragement. A couple of them went to London. I think one went to Germany. They might have established something. It wasn't very successful, but that was his desire, that he continually wanted this to happen. And, of course, he began the tradition of printing and distribution of books and literature that we saw Srila Prabhupada so absolutely ardently and successfully take up that mission to continue it. So, just a few quick things about the life of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He was born, according to the Western calendar, February 6, 1874. Of course, we observed appearances by the Vedic calendar. I don't know, what do they call it? Vedic calendar? I guess that's, I don't know what I should call it. The lunar calendar. Okay, the lunar calendar. Great. So anyway, so today is that day. He was the fourth son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who had, as we know, many children. He came from this very prestigious family. There was a Vaishnava line of Disciplic succession that started from, originally from Bharata Maharaj, but more recently Narottam Das Thakur. And so their family, Bhaktivinoda, was the 12th generation of disciples from Narottam's father, Raj Krishnananda. I don't think Narottam had any children. Lifetime Brahmachari. But probably through his uncles and, you know, other people in the family, that line continued. His mother was Srimati Bhagavati Devi, another great devotee. And, of course, his spiritual line of his initiation came through the Madhva Sampradaya, and of course Lord Chaitanya, the six Goswamis, etc. And of course he was the disciple of Gorky Shortis Babaji. Now, and he lived, I said, till either December 31st or January 1st, 1937. Sometimes I've seen it both ways. It was right at that time. He showed signs of greatness from the time of birth and childhood. When he was born, the umbilical cord was wrapped around him like a Brahmin thread. That was one auspicious sign. When he was a small baby, of course, at that time, they lived in Jagannath Puri, and they lived right along the Rath route, the Rath Yatra route. And during the cart festival, as it does sometimes, the cart stops and starts, but it stopped right in front of the house, and it would not move. It couldn't be moved. Finally, his mother Bhagavati brings him out to see the deities, and the garland falls off Lord Jagannath and is offered to Bhaktisiddhanta. And then, of course, the cart starts up. So this was another thing everyone realized, very, very special person. He was an incredible scholar, even at the earliest age. It said that anything that he heard once, he could remember and repeat. That's very rare in this world. In former yugas, that could be done, but in Kali Yuga, no, not so much. So he would go to school very faithfully, but he wouldn't really spend a lot of time with his studies. He heard it once from his teachers, and he knew it. He could pass every test brilliantly, but he spent most of his time actually with reading scripture, reading philosophical things, especially as he got a little bit older into his teens. He spent a lot of time reading his father's work and other Vaishnava literatures. He was very learned. He studied Sanskrit, astrology, mathematics, and he wrote very extensively. Even in the beginning, he became very, very experienced at astrology and very expert to the degree that he was actually offered a position when he was early 20s, I think, at the University of Calcutta to teach astrology there. And also he was offered mathematics appointments, but he turned these down because he thought that would distract him from his mission for Lord Chaitanya. He did serve the king of Tripura for several years as a teacher. He tutored his children, taught them different subjects, including the spiritual subjects. But finally, about 1905, and he was very much favored by the king. They liked him very much. But he renounced all of that. By about 1905, he quit completely. No more so-called, quote, material engagements as far as working with. I mean, most of these people were not materialists, but still, he didn't see any need for that because he wanted to really focus on writing, preaching, the message of Lord Chaitanya. So in 1898, he takes initiation from Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. That's, of course, a fairly long story. We'll try to say it very quickly. Basically, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was one of the leaders of the Gaudiya Vaishnavs there in the Mayapur Navadvip area. Very, very famed for his renunciation, very strict renunciate. He was not highly educated. Sometimes he said that he's illiterate, but I don't think he was completely illiterate because he did carry a book or two with him. He must have read a little bit, but he wasn't a scholar by any means. And of course, in other words, he was almost the opposite of Bhaktisiddhanta, who was a fantastic, tremendous scholar, you know, that one to be reckoned with. So and following the advice of his father, who Bhaktivinoda Thakur recognized the greatness of Gaur Kishore and his devotion, and so he asked him to accept him as a disciple. And, you know, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji had no disciples. He wasn't really interested. So we kind of put him off, and finally he was pushing. He says, I'll see what Lord Chaitanya says. And so long went by, and Bhaktivinoda says, well, what did he say? He says, oh, I forgot. I'll ask him. So this happened right the third time. He asked him, he said, oh, I did ask what Lord Chaitanya Maharaj. He says, I didn't get any indication really to give initiation. And Bhaktisiddhanta was just, you know, devastated. And he basically begged him. He said, I'm ready to give up my life. What use is my life if I don't have a guru? You know, I want to accept you as my guru. Finally, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was moved by this, so he agreed. And he became his only disciple. Then, actually in 1905, when he was 31 years old, he takes this great vow to chant a billion names. I think that took about 9 years, as I recall. And I believe he was basically following the footsteps of Namacharya Haridas Thakur, chanting 300,000 names a day, 192 rounds. And I think if you calculate that, that comes out to a billion after so many years. So a tremendous, tremendous vow of austerity, and he did that. Then after he finished that, well, even while he was doing it, but he began his very vigorous preaching. He was like fully charged. He was establishing temples. He was making many disciples. And most of all, he was establishing printing presses, writing, translating, editing, and, you know, publishing many, many books. He established periodicals in Bengali, Hindi, and English. I'll talk a little more about his literary accomplishments. And then he finally retired to Jagannath Puri at the very, you know, end of his life, and he gave his body in the end of 1937. And the last words he spoke, at least they say, were these. To all he announced, please accept my blessings to you all, present and absent. Please bear in mind our sole duty and religion is to spread and propagate service to the Lord and his devotees. So, of course, right up to the end, you know, preaching the message of devotional service. Okay, his appearance. On the fifth day of the dark lunar fortnight of the month of Govinda, by the way, most of the things I'm reading come from The Ray of Vishnu by Rupa Vilas Prabhu. By the Western calendar, Bhima Prasad Datta, later to be known as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, made his appearance in Purushottama Kshetra, Jagannath Puri, in the state of Orissa, not far from the temple of Jagannath, fourth son of Srila Bhaktivinoda and Sri Yukta Bhagavati Devi. And at the time of his birth, all 32 bodily symptoms of a Mahapurusha, great personality, were pointed out by an experienced astrologer. He had the umbilical cord wrapped around his neck like a Brahmin's thread. And the astrologer commented at his birth, I have done many horoscopes in my life, but I have never before seen such a horoscope filled with all the signs of a great personality. This child had become world famous as a brilliant teacher of life's ultimate goal. And of course, he was absolutely right. And of course, then when he was 6 months old, I already mentioned the Jagannath's garland fell during the Rath Yatra. And so that was, of course, a very wonderful event. Then the grain ceremony was observed on a cart at that time and done by with Jagannath Prasad. The boy's vocational inclination was tested and immediately embraced the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, indicating his future as a preacher. So from the very beginning, he exhibited all the signs of an exalted, eternal ray of the Lord who descended to answer Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayer, and his prayer was for a ray of Vishnu to help him spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Another incident when he was a child that showed his strength and determination that was always there. When he was a small boy, perhaps 2 or 3 years old, Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought some ripe mangoes from the market. Bimal Prasad took one to eat, saying, "This is mine." Bhaktivinoda Thakur got up and said in a grave voice, "What is this? New fruit has come in the house? It has not been offered to Giridhari, and you have taken it first? Remember, new fruit is to be given first to the Lord. Without giving the first share to the Lord, nothing is to be taken." He was very repentant and exclaimed, "Oh, what evil thoughts I've had. This is 2 or 3 years old. Throughout my whole life, I will not eat these again." And he did. He never ate a mango the rest of his life, sort of as a penance for taking an unoffered mango. Even though it was probably when he tells, he said, you can't blame a 2 or 3 year old child. They're innocent. There's no real harm, no blame, but yet still took it so seriously. And of course, in his adult life, this purity and determination continued. He was a lifelong celibate brahmachari, very learned in all these fields, astrology, mathematics. He took the great vow of chanting a billion names when he was 31 years old. And he resided in a grass hut at the yoga pith for 4 years and built a cottage near the yoga pith at the site of the house of Sri Chandrasekharacharya. The place is considered to be non-different from the banks of Radhakund. And there he remained uninterruptedly executing his chanting. He strictly followed a vow and observed Chaturmasya, cooking rice which had been dried in the sun and ghee and eating it from the floor in the manner of a cow. I wouldn't try that at home. He would take rest lying on the ground. I wouldn't be able to get up. Never using any pillows, constantly chanting, studying the scriptures. Seeing his renunciation, his Gurudev, Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, "I observed that the renunciation of Sri Rupa Raghunath is manifest in my Prabhu." He used to address his disciples, "My Prabhu." That's his great humility, of course. Then when he began preaching, very, very strongly establishing temples, writing, and he was preaching very strongly to defeat Mayavadi philosophy, caste Brahmanism, and many deviations from Vaishnavism. Now, during that time period, there were many deviant sects of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. I've been reading Chaitanya Bhagavat recently, and in his purports, he is just over and over and over again, those of you remember, like, so almost blasting away at Mayavadis, at these deviant sects of Vaishnavism that basically give the whole movement a bad name. You know, they're complete deviations. They make up so many things, and obviously materialists, impersonalists, everyone else. So there was this long history of diversion from the path of Lord Chaitanya that the Vaishnavas have had to constantly battle against, it seems. Advaitacharya had 6 sons. 3 of them followed the path led by Chitananda, great, you know, devotees, acharyas, and 3 of them deviated. So even that far back, this was happening and was continuing on. I mean, some of these different groups considered Advaita supreme, others accepted Chaitanya but not Nityananda, some followed Nityananda but not Chaitanya. You know, it was like so many different things. And it's described that he describes there were 13 Asampradaya sects of Vaishnavas, or so-called Vaishnavas. And that included everything from the Sahajiyas to the Smartas, and then many, many different, you know, versions. It's kind of like whatever you wanted, there was, you know, whatever you wanted to believe, whatever you wanted to do, there was something for you there. Now, a group he often targeted is what we call, or he called, Prakriti Sahajiyas. Of course, Prakriti means materialistic, so because they're cheap imitators. The Prakriti Sahaji is one who wants to immediately go to showing himself as a very, very advanced devotee. So when we were just reading a purport a couple days ago, where Prabhupada was talking about that tendency to want to jump to the 10th canto and the Rasa dance, even though one's not qualified, hasn't read any of the rest of the Bhagavatam, probably hasn't read the Bhagavatam, doesn't know anything about the philosophy, but they're attracted, you know, to these more esoteric pastimes and topics of Krishna. And not only that, many of them become very imitative. And those are the most degraded. They actually try to imitate the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And I was just reading a transcription of a class that Prabhupada gave about Bhaktisiddhanta, and he was talking about these people. And he basically said, and they're all, you know, engaged in illicit sex, you know, smoking ganja, everything, you know. I mean, in other words, all kinds of activities. Because after all, you know, they're in this high exalted place, position where they don't have to follow rules and regulations. So, of course, a very, very advanced devotee reaches the stage of Raganuga, where one does not have to so much follow all the regulations just based upon, scriptural regulation, because one becomes very eager to hear and chant, very eager to follow the processes, very eager to worship the deity, and it becomes spontaneous. And love of God actually starts to develop more and more. That's not what this is. This is like, I don't have to do anything. I don't have to practice sadhana for many years. I just immediately am there and show the world, make a pretense of being an advanced devotee. And this just infuriated Bhaktisiddhanta. And he would just go after these people. There's one girl of these groups is called Gauranga Nagaris, that he also really seemed to have a strong dislike for, because what they did is they worship Lord Chaitanya in the mood of Krishna and joined with the gopis. And of course, Lord Chaitanya never presented himself this way. He presented himself in the mood of a devotee, right? Now, those who were on the inner circle, they knew who Krishna was. I mean, they knew who Lord Chaitanya was, Krishna. But he didn't present himself that way, at least publicly, ever. And he never presented himself in that mood. Even though he was actually in the mood of Radharani, he did not present himself as Krishna and join with the gopis ever. He was always in the mood of not of the served, but of the server, of the servant. So anyway, in the Mayavadi, of course, philosophy denies the eternal spiritual person of God, since everything is illusion, we are all God. And so his strong preaching would really go against them. And if he had met a Mayavadi, he would say, "Why are you misleading everyone?" That was practically not, "Hello, Hari Bol, how are you doing?" It was, "Why are you misleading public with this nonsense philosophy?" And he was actually called the Singha Guru, the Lion Guru, because he was such a strong preacher. And it says that the Mayavadi sannyasis would cross the street to avoid him. You know, because, I mean, not just that he would chastise them, but if they engaged in debate with him, they had no chance. Because he could defeat anybody. And it was almost reminiscent of like when Lord Chaitanya, you know, prowling the streets of Navadvip, anybody, scholar he met, defeat them. And, you know, nobody could defeat him. But he said, it was something like that, you know, where he couldn't be defeated. Now, also at this time, the Brahminical caste system was very entrenched. And these were generally Brahmins who were considered by birth only, called Jata Goswamis. The Jata Goswamis say, I'm born in this family of Goswamis, therefore, you know, I am ahead of everybody. I'm better than, it's basically, they're very puffed up. I'm better than everyone. I'm the only one who can do service. I'm the only one who can serve the deity. I'm the only one, only us. And so these are often called Smarta Brahmins, because they're really more interested in the position, the rules, the rituals, than they really are in developing devotion, developing love of God. And so it was a very closed system that did not allow spiritual access to all people. And of course, Lord Chaitanya and the Vaishnavas always preach that all living entities are equal. Anyone can become purified, anyone can attain to Krishna consciousness, and anyone can attain the highest level of Krishna consciousness, and even one who is a dog eater, there's many, many scriptural verses substantiating it. Even one on the level of a chandala, or dog eater, can become higher than the highest Brahmin if they become a pure lover of God, if they become a pure devotee of Krishna. And conversely, one may be a very exalted Brahmin by status and by birth, but if they're not a devotee of Krishna, then they're actually lower than that. And that was a message that was repeated continuously. And that leads us to the famous story of him defeating the Brahmins. I'll read this. This is the Bhaktisiddhanta's speech in 1911. And he was a great meeting of pundits to discuss topics of what was called Brahmanism and Vaishnavism. And there was both sides were represented there, the Vaishnavs and the other Brahmins. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was invited, but 1911 was practically the end of his life. So he sent his son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. And so here it is, just, you know, not even Bhaktivinoda, but, you know, just the son, the young one. Initially, he began to recite the glories of the Brahmins. The opposing pundits were beside themselves with joy. They had no idea there were so many verses glorifying Brahmins, and they eagerly heard Siddhanta Saraswati speak. However, Siddhanta Saraswati then began to explain and define the Brahmin, the Vaishnav, the relationship between the two, the qualification of a guru, etc. And then the opposition's joy quickly subsided. When no one could offer a strong argument in response, a huge uproar commenced. Some counter-arguments were given, but Siddhanta Saraswati immediately refuted their contentions with searing logic. The meeting went on this day for 3 days. The Vaishnavs all offered strong arguments that no matter what family a Vaishnav appears in, he is perfectly qualified to worship the Shalagram Shila and recite the Vedas. On the final day, Siddhanta Saraswati was the concluding speaker. He spoke brilliantly with great vigor and incredible rhetoric for 2 hours. When he finished, no one on the opposing party could say a word. There was simply no way to counter him. There was a huge uproar and acclaim of the brilliant Acharya. Thousands of people rushed forward to take the dust of his lotus feet. So another triumph there against the smarter Brahmins. As far as his literary accomplishments, he established many presses and printed thousands of books. In 1928, he even established a daily newspaper called the Nadia Prakash. When challenged, how was it possible to publish a daily newspaper about God? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained how this world was a small place, only 1/4 of the creation compared to the spiritual world, which comprises the other 3/4. He explained, here in this world, there are thousands of newspapers and magazines reporting the stale, repetitious happenings of this limited space. So for reporting the news of the unlimited spiritual realm concerning the eternal, ever-fresh, supreme personality of Godhead, we could publish a newspaper at every second, what to speak of daily. And of course, he established many printing presses, different magazines and periodicals, Sajjana Tosini, established in 1881 by Bhakti Vinod. He renamed it The Harmonist, an English monthly, and I think Srila Prabhupada made contributions to The Harmonist and continued it, I believe. The Gaudiya was in 1922 was a weekly journal. The Nadia Prakash was a daily newspaper, and the Bhagavat started in 1931 was a Hindi fortnightly. So they were in Bengali, Hindi, English, and had very wide circulation. He personally wrote over 100 essays and books, and aside from these, he also published hundreds of articles in these periodicals. And then, of course, apart from his own writing, he published many other books, including translations, commentaries, and original writings of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Narottam Das Thakur, Lochan, Sri Jiva Goswami, and he edited countless other books by his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and printed them. Probably the ones that we're most familiar with are his purports to Brahma Samhita, which is, you know, usually around, devotees have had that for many years, and of course, Chaitanya Bhagavat. He wrote the purports, I think he originally, well, no, he wrote them in Bengali, purports, and they were recently translated by, I don't know if he's here, but Pundarik Vijayaniti is one, one we can thank for that, for editing and overseeing the production of the translations of Chaitanya Bhagavat into English. Here's an example from an article just to get a little flavor of his writing. Excuse me. There's a certain class of people who are devoid of ordinary common sense, who say the function of the servant in this world is the worst of all. We have therefore no intention of practicing any similar function in the next world. We intend to be masters, to be objects of worship. There's a popular tale to illustrate such misconceptions. A certain boatman was troubled by the idea that the operation of pulling at the cord for towing his boat was a miserable job involving great hardship. It was quite a trudge along the banks of the river, the canals, on uneven ground, over thorns and brambles that often stuck in the bare soles of his feet. Therefore, if he could manage to get rich somehow, he'd be in a position to tug at the cord by bestriding quilts and mattresses that he'd take to spread over either bank of the river. Obviously very foolish. In other words, the boatmaster was so foolish that he intended to carry all the miserable pursuits of his poverty-stricken state into the condition of affluence. So he really couldn't see beyond his own condition. So if he has a lot of money, he thinks some way, well, I could make my feet a little more comfortable this way. The consideration that if he could get rich, it might not be necessary for him to tug at the cord at all would not penetrate his foolish pate. It's an old term for head, I guess. Those persons who are bent on journeying to the transcendental realm, laden with all the superstitions and material judgments of this world, who are anxious to transport their sense-ridden logic to the transcendental realm, who choose to imagine that in that realm that lies beyond this world, there can be any scope, the unavoidable slave mentality of this world, or any form of service which is anyway characterized by the factors of this unwholesomeness of this world, are indeed as stupid as the foolish boatman of the story. In other words, it's the analogy is to those who think that somehow the spiritual world will be like the material world, and everything that we suffer in the pains here will be the same, and therefore they want to give up everything, and they become impersonalists, because they can't imagine that there actually could be a world where there is beauty, there is peace, there is complete eternal happiness and bliss at all times, complete knowledge. So that's inconceivable. Another thing that was, I think, very important about his work and his life was bringing, as I said, bringing Vaishnava into the 20th century. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was an innovator in many ways. Although sannyasis traditionally never used any conveyances with the exception of ox carts, he rode in motor cars, boats, etc. Although sannyasis never wore sewn cloth, he and his preachers on occasion wore overcoats, kurtas, etc. He utilized the radio for broadcasting his message, and he sent sannyasis over the sea, which was considered revolutionary. All of this innovation was strictly in the mood of spreading the glories of the Lord and engaging people in Krishna consciousness. He adhered strictly to the principle of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but with a view to liberate people. His principle of renunciation was the type described by Srila Rupa Goswami as Yukta Vairagya, engaging the illusory energy fully in the service of Krishna. For himself, he was never influenced by any desire for adoration or sense gratification. He also propagated many theistic displays and diorama exhibitions between 1928 in Kurukshetra, Mayapur, Calcutta, Dhaka, Patna, Bihar, Benares, and Prayag. These exhibitions were free and were staged with the help of toys, dolls, pictures, writings, and even mechanical devices for moving the dolls, describing the Leela of Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, etc. And they were generally held for 15 days. So he continued to expand Krishna consciousness in many ways in trying to use many, many different modes, many, many different media to be able to establish Krishna consciousness and to actually make it very accessible. You can imagine he puts on a big fair and they have all of these plays and probably puppet shows and they have the dioramas, and you know, he's really developed the dioramas that Prabhupada later, you know, also advocated and had the diorama museum made in by the Fate artists in Los Angeles and like that. So he was quite an innovator. You can imagine the common people would come to this and they would see all these wonderful things and that would attract them. But what they were getting, the Leela of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna. So, of course, they gained benefit and became attracted to Krishna consciousness. I'm going to, my last thing I want to talk about is Srila Prabhupada's first meeting. And this is from an appearance day lecture about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's appearance day, 1971, Gorakhpur, India. So Prabhupada is giving the lecture on this day. He says, Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, my spiritual master, his advent day is today. In 1922, I was at that time very much engaged in Congress activity. That's the party of Gandhi. I was very much devout follower of Mahatma Gandhi, and at that time I was manager of a big chemical concern in Calcutta. One of my friends, he's still living, Sri Narendranath Mulak, he informed me, one saintly person has come, let us go and see. At that time, I was a young man, and I did not care very much for these so-called saintly persons, because in our house, my father used to receive so many sannyasis, but some of them were not very much to the standard. And due to my association with college friends, younger days, I had lost my faith practically. Well, we know he didn't, but although I was born in a Vaishnava family, my father was a pure Vaishnava. From my childhood, he gave me Radha Krishna deity for worshiping. So I was trained in this line, but in my youthful age, when I was a college student, gradually by bad association, I lost these activities. But when this friend, Mr. Mullock, took me to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, he, Bhaktisiddhanta, immediately asked me, "You are educated young boys. Why don't you take up Lord Chaitanya's message and preach in the Western world?" In the very first sight, he told me, I think he offered his obeisance almost before they got up, he's saying, "Go and preach in the Western world." You know, at that time, I argued with him that we're a dependent nation. Who is going to hear our message? So he defeated my argument. Yes, he defeated my argument, of course. He was a learned scholar. What was I? I was still a boy. So I agreed that I was defeated. So after that first visit with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, my friend asked my opinion. "Now, what is your opinion?" So I said, "Here is a person who's taken Lord Chaitanya's movement very seriously, and now it will be preached." So that was 1922. Then in 23, I left Calcutta on a business account and started my business in Allahabad. But I was always thinking of my Guru Maharaj, although I was not at the time initiated. But the impression was there. I was thinking, I met a very nice saintly person. Then during Kumbh Mela in 1928, my Guru Maharaj, along with other disciples, came to Allahabad, starting a branch there. And he actually helped them financially start that branch, Prabhupada. In this way, my connection was more intimate with my Guru Maharaj. And in 1933, I was initiated officially. I think that was in Vrindavan. There was a parikrama at Vrindavan that he attended. In this way, my connection was more intimate with my Guru Maharaj. In 1933, I was initiated officially, although I was initiated in 1922. But officially 33, because from 22 to 33, I was always thinking of his divine grace. So 1936, he was to pass away by December 31st. On my own accord, I wrote one letter. Now, in another writing or lecture, Prabhupada said he wrote the letter in the middle of November, and he actually received the reply December 13th, you know, the time for the mail. He was in Bombay for the mail to get there and the answer and come back. And Bhaktisiddhanta is sick at that time. And so this is 2 weeks before the departure of Bhaktisiddhanta. And he wrote, "Guru Maharaj, you have got so many disciples. Some of them are directly serving you. I could not do so. I'm a householder. So if you give me some direct service to you, it will be very kind of you." So he replied in that letter 2 weeks before he departed, "You try to preach in the English language. Then the persons will be instructed by you and the persons who will be instructed by you and both you yourself will be benefited." Again, he said the same thing he ordered me in 1922 at first sight. Then he passed away on 31st December. So, consistent message. Preach in the Western world, preach in the English language, and Srila Prabhupada finally, 30 years later, was able to take it up, obviously with great vigor, even at a more elderly age. So in many ways, that's one of the most important events, I think, was Srila Prabhupada's meeting with Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj and taking initiation and taking his order so seriously. He meditated on the order for all those years, since 1922 until he was finally able to execute it. And, you know, it's not like he forgot about it. You know, maybe not so important. No, he was always thinking, how can I do this? And he finally made the arrangements. So, of course, he came to the West, preached strongly, translated the Vaishnava literatures in English, began so many temples. In this way, Prabhupada in every way fulfilled the order and the desire of his divine grace, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who also very faithfully executed the order of his predecessor, Acharyas, continued the work of his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and most importantly, helped to spread the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to spread the chanting of the holy name and the Vedic literatures throughout the world. So very, very wonderful day, a good day to meditate on his divine grace, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Thakur. Jai. Well, I know it's late and probably people have to leave, but Shesha Prabhu, comment, question, or additional stories?
Some addition to your nice description of Prabhupada's first meeting with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Now ISKCON, has acquired the property where that first meeting took place at Otatunga Junction Road. And they've developed a sort of museum there commemorating the first meeting.
And the microphone's not real clear. I can't quite.
Okay.
I'm half deaf.
The devotees, ISKCON devotees, have acquired Otatunga Junction Road, where Prabhupada first met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and they developed a museum-type presentation there in remembrance of that event.
Okay, when he first met him on where?
Utadanga.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, aren't they developing that property now, or into a temple? Yeah. I think it's going along well, isn't it? That's going to be a place of pilgrimage almost, of remembrance of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta.
Yes. Yeah.
Very nice. Thank you. Thank you for that.
I just wanted to mention, I was in Vrindavan on this day, I forget how many years ago, but it's also the disappearance day of His Holiness Gaura Govinda Maharaj.
On the same day?
Yes, It was the same day. And also when you were describing Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivinoda Thakur coming in the line of Narottam Das, I believe Gaura Govinda Swami's family line also was like that. He was singing those songs all his childhood as well. Okay. I just wanted to remind the devotees.
All right.
In 1982, I had just moved in the temple. Just a few devotees, maybe five, six devotees, and it was the appearance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And we all fell asleep. Well, we were supposed to get up for Mangala Arati. And I remember clearly something hit the building.
What?
Three times, and I woke up.
Oh.
It was a few minutes from Mangala Arati. We jump up, well, maybe half an hour or something. I got all the devotees round upon me. We attend. That thing stuck in my mind forever. You know? Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Jai. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. All glory to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. Oh. Namo Vishvanatha.